You cannot pass, he said. The orc stood still and a dead silence fell. I am a servant of the sacred fire, wielder of the flame of Anor. You cannot pass. The dark fire will not avail you, flame of Udon. Go back to the shadow. You cannot pass. Welcome to a sacred fellowship where we are reading the Lord of the Rings using sacred practices. We are using the text to learn, to reflect on our lives, and to think about life's big questions. We believe that through treating the Hobbit and the Lord of the Rings as sacred, we will learn to treat one another as sacred. Whew, I practiced that. And I still didn't. Anyway, that's a hard bunch of lines. Hi, Catherine.
Oh my gosh, they are epic lines though, and you said them so gently and mild-manneredly, and I'm going, but you're not Ian McKellen, and thank goodness for that, but it's good right. to see you. I still got chills from that, don't worry.
Can't pretend to be Ian McKellen, so it had to be, how would I do it? Anyway, how are you?
I am tired, but that's another story.
All right, well, introduce us, please.
Well, this is episode 38, where your hosts, Catherine Olson and Lorianne Schwenk, will be discussing the fifth chapter in the Journey of the Nine Companions, The Bridge of Khazad-dûm, through the theme of recklessness. Take a seat on the huge and age-worn steps, or settle in your car seat and join us. Reading in community is an essential part of what it means for us to treat a text as sacred, and we're glad you're here to build community with us.
Yes, thank you. So as we like to do, we like to catch up on how we are. And Catherine, do you have a dungeon or a tower for us?
Well, my tower is definitely yesterday. So I have a number of nephews, but the oldest one of a certain span of time. So I have one nephew who's 21 and then a bunch of nephews and nieces who are 12 to 1 years old. So very big age gap. But the one who is about to turn 12, Cal, who lives in California, he just got ordained yesterday as a deacon in our church, which is a huge step, and I'm very proud of him. And I sent him a kind of sweet note to let him know that I hoped he would live up to his dad's a great example, because I remember his dad when he was that age, and how is my brother that old?
Oh my goodness.
It's just unfair. I remember when my brother was 12 years old, but yeah. I'm not going to go into that.
And meanwhile, your brother is 21, will soon be having lots of stories about when he was a missionary, right?
Oh, he's actually not a practitioner, but that's okay. You know, he's a wonderful guy with upstanding morals, and he is in his own faith, and that's what we respect.
There we are.
Anyway, that's a long story.
But you had people from Peru, right? You had family from—
Yes, that was actually my sister-in-law's parents, who are the leaders of the mission down in Lima, Peru.
Wow.
Great to have them all the way from there.
Great. Very good.
Anyway, yeah. So my dungeon probably has to be that I swear the last 2 weeks I've been talking about migraines, and it's just that I came back from vacation with a migraine, and it seems every few days I get another one. So I'm working on trying to get past that, and I do have medication for it, and if anyone's wondering, but it's just been a hard month.
It really
How about you?
Right. It has been just about since you came back. That's not fair. Well, you know, my book dungeon, I'm thinking of a friend, and he's one of those folks, and probably a lot of people can relate to that, who's got a cluster of anniversaries in the next few days. And you know, basically from end of January till next Monday is the anniversary of this death, that death, this happening, that happening. And it's just hard. And so I'm just really feeling for him and thinking about that. So I'll say that that's my dungeon for this week, and lifting him up. And if he's listening, he'll know. So I won't even say his name, but it's just a hard time. So I've been thinking about him. So and hope that he finds ways to walk through this and not pretend it's not here, which I know he's good at doing. For a tower, I hate to anchor this in a time or space, but yesterday, Tom and Gronk. That's all I'll say. And I don't care what uniforms they're wearing.
Okay, well, I know you are not going to name names more specifically than that, but I will say that I have a friend with a son who is named Braden Thomas for Tom Brady. And yes. This was her first time cheering on Tom Brady in a completely different uniform, and she was still proud of him. So I think that's good. A good thing.
That's who I mean and what I'm talking about. So,
and otherwise, I don't care about football, but I know that that happened.
That happened. So this week we have the theme of recklessness going with this chapter on the Bridge of Khazad Dûm, and you have a story for us.
I do, and I actually had to work pretty hard to think about a recklessness in my own life because, you know, well, frankly, I should have had a lot more unfortunate adventures than I have, but I've been lucky in some senses. But one of the things is I grew up with a confidant who I discovered was not very trustworthy at times. Mm. And 10 years ago, no, now we're coming up on 11 years ago, I had a situation where I needed that person's advice. And I thought, you know, this person has proven themselves to be trustworthy. They have been loyal and true. And I can talk to them about this issue that I'm having with another person. So I confided in them again, and they swore not to actually talk to anyone else about this. And as soon as we hung up the phone, they called that person, told them everything, and actually skewed it. So that person came away with the impression that I thought they were a horrible person. And they called me to clear this up, and we got it all resolved, or so I thought, until last year when I got an email from this person bringing up the things that I had said about them and the hurt I had caused them. And I'm going, I thought we resolved this 10 years ago. Yeah. And so it turns out that this person has felt that I did not like them for 10 years, and they have acted towards me with this kind of relationship in mind for those 10 years. And so I decided to trust that person, the one who had caused problems before, assuming that there wouldn't be consequences. And for me, that was sadly untrue. Mm-hmm. And so I don't like it when I feel like I can't trust people, but I have learned that I really have to be more guarded than I used to be.
An interesting link there between reckless and trusting. That's mm-hmm. a very interesting connection, not where I was expecting you to go with the story on recklessness, but that's
well,
a
you
good
nearly
one.
Talked about the Nazis and the communists in Russia, but that sounded really off topic.
right. Well, that
there was a discussion last week on the Tolkien Forever page about the Molotov von Ribbentrop Pact and how it applies to Lord of the Rings. So that's where my brain was going.
Very good. Well, I appreciate your story, and I'm sorry that happened. And I'm guessing that now we know not to trust that first person.
Yeah, but we at least know that things can be mended even after 10 years of misinterpretation.
Yes, that is a good thing to know. And then just a reminder, if you enjoy our thoughts, please check out Second Breakfast. It's our blog on the website. We say that it is written by the nerds of the Kindly West. Guess what? That's us. And Catherine recently wrote on matters of statement. So you can find that by going to our website, www.asacredfellowship.com, and then click on Second Breakfast, because the podcast is the main feast. But if you need Second Breakfast, that's where to go. So please read those comments, share your insights as well. And then because of such an interesting word like restless, is it all right if we hear from the Gammers before we go into the chapter?
I assume you mean reckless instead of restless?
Reckless, yes.
Okay, just making sure we're on the same theme.
Right.
Okay,
right.
Please do talk about recklessness.
Reckless. It is Germanic and Old English. And there's a word like ruccio, R-U-C-H-I-O, which means wicked. So I think it is interesting that you did make this tie to not being trustworthy. I thought that was interesting. So the verb for it was to do wickedness. And it is interesting. It is actually used in a spot in Return of the King, and as the verb wreck. The verb wreck is used in Return of the King, and it's used in a context of being careless, thoughtless, and heedless. So I wanted to share that. We will later see the word affray, A-F-F-R-A-Y, which is fear and terror or a state of alarm. And it comes from an older word, esfrir, E-S-F-R-E-E-R, which means removing peace.
Mm. I
think that is very interesting. And then the Latin going farther back, exfrid, E-X-F-R-I-D, exfridare, removing peace. So I thought that was interesting. And then I was really curious, just again, thinking about reckless can mean doing wickedness. Brave actually has origins in being cutthroat or being villainous. And to bray is to shriek. And there's a Celtic word, which is very similar. And I'm not even going to try because I have no idea how to pronounce Celtic words, B-R-E-A-G-H. Which might be 17 syllables for all I know, or half of a syllable, but it also means to shriek or cackle. And it is similar to the word for brawl. So I was really struck by that, that we think of brave as this admirable quality, but it has its history in kind of the opposite, in this villainy. And then wrath itself also, you know, we think of that as extreme anger, and there's Old English and W-R-O-E-D-D. So the German gave us the T-H. Wrath is anger, tormented, twisted. It's similar to the word wraith. So there's evil to that. So it is not just an anger. It is to this level of evil. And then the gammers were most excited about the word bowls. And I just was so happy. They were just sputtering. They couldn't stand it. And this comes from when they finally get to the great hall, and before the bridge, there is a description of this hall, loftier, far longer. Down the center stalked a double line of towering pillars. They were carved like boles of mighty trees. And boles is one of these really old words. This is Proto-Indo-European all the way back. It is such an old word. And it's interesting, there is tree in it. And if you think of apple, think of the end of apple, the P-L-E. And as I'm trying to open this link, I'm just gonna natter on and on. Haver, there's another good old word. So B-H-E-L is this Proto-Indo-European root. And it can mean to blow or to swell. So you think of a tree growing or swelling. There is the echo of tumescent masculinity in there. And I'll leave you to sound that out for yourself. Think of a bale or a bundle or baling or a ball, a balloon, a ballot, boulder, boulevard, even a bowl, like a bowl of soup, bulk, bull. Bullock, follicle, folly, fool, foosball has two words in it, and bilge, billow, so billowing, bulging. So it helped me to see this hall, to be in this hall with these bowls holding up the ceiling. So I was just really enjoyed finding that out. And there are several tree words that echo with that, but especially that just right there to the word apple with the end of that word. So the gammers got very excited this week.
Couldn't tell.
And so now I think we need to discuss the theme in the chapter. So would you please start, because I've talked way too much.
Oh, no such thing. So for me, it starts, obviously they're still in the hole where they found Jabalin's tomb.
I guess they the Chamber of Records, right?
Yes.
Right.
And there's another word for it. I believe it's Mazarbor. Mm-hmm. But for me, it really starts out with this investigation into what happens to the people who came into Moria, and they go into great detail about it, their arrival and what they did to prepare themselves to enter Moria, and then their discovery of Mithril and that sort of thing, and the upper armories of the Third Deep. But then we get to this part on the second page of the chapter. "I fear he had ill tidings to record in a fair hand," said Gandalf. "The first clear word is sorrow, but the rest of the line is lost unless it ends in Estra. Yes, it must be Yestra, followed by day, being the 10th of November. Balin, Lord of Moria, fell in Dimrildale. He went alone to look in the Miramir, an orc shot from behind a stone. We slew the orc, but many more, up from the east up of the Silver Load." And so they're going through all of this information, and I kind of have this very 2020 hindsight sort of moment, and not in the sense of the year that we've just had.
Yeah.
But looking at all of this, and there were all of these signs of dangers and all of the signs of they're not prepared to face the foe that remains there. And I hate to victim blame, but I really keep on reading this and getting a little bit of anxiety over them not leaving or not taking further measures to shore up their defenses. So that's really the first place where I find it.
And the language is even there. "At length they stirred and looked up and began to search, and then he pored over the book for some time." So the language even tells us that they're really lingering. And I'm the same. I'm screaming at them in the page, "Get going, get going." But there's another level of recklessness there, where clearly Balin and his company dug too deep. Mm-hmm. And so there was this recklessness in this search. And so it made me wonder, was he reckless in a way to repeat the success of what happened before with Bilbo going to that mountain and recovering treasure? Did he want to have his own hoard of treasure in a mountain and be lord of it there in Moria? And I'm wondering if you think his whole quest was reckless. Balin's quest.
Well, I think that I wouldn't consider the reclaiming of Erebor's treasure as a successful thing, but as something where it was eucatastrophically resolved in a way that did no more harm than it already happened. And that's a long story, but we've been through that for 20 episodes.
Right.
But on the other hand, I think he looks at it as, we have successfully reclaimed one home. What is stopping us from reclaiming another?
Yes. Yes.
So I think the Mithril is an added perk, but it's really about reclaiming the foothold that they used to have in Moria.
And then I don't know if I've missed something, but how is it that no one is aware that this is what Balin did and what happened to him?
I know. I keep on wondering, well, I've been watching too much Game of Thrones and actually rereading the books. So I'm going, did someone kill all the ravens? Or are there no ways? I mean, come on. There had to be some kind of gossip about, well, we saw Balin go into the mountain and we haven't heard from him for, 20 years. But who knows?
Yeah. And Gandalf seems to know everything about everybody when he's at the Council of Elrond. And and yet it seems that he never managed to check out what was going on with Balin. So that's just maybe a question that we can't answer. But if otherwise, maybe it is even more reckless Otherwise, it sounds almost as if he went off with a small company without telling anybody. So nobody knew what he was doing or why or where he went. And then they just didn't hear from him for 30 years. And yes, I want Gandalf to just stop going through this. Where was the next place that you found recklessness?
Well, for me, actually, it's in this moment where we have, sorry, I have to set it up a little bit. We cannot get out. We cannot get out. The end comes and drums in the deep. And then they have this moment later on whereupon Gandalf had hardly spoken these words saying back to the hall, when there came a great noise, a rolling boom that seemed to come from the depths far below and to tremble in the stone at their feet. They sprang towards the door in alarm. It rolled again, as if huge hands were returning the very caverns of Moria into a vast drum. Then there came an echoing blast, a great horn was blown in the hall, and answering horns and harsh cries were heard further off. There was a hurrying sound of many feet. They are coming, we cannot get out. Trapped, said Gandalf. I'm just going, there is such an echo of the complacency that led to such tragedy in the previous part, and today I don't think they entirely understand in that moment the irony of being trapped by the same thing. And so I see that as they really should have paid better attention, or they should have avoided what they could, but I don't think there was really any better way to do it. I mean, this is a horrifically unavoidable situation in this thing that they are not aware of until this point.
And Gandalf even says a little bit earlier, it was valiant and foolish, so the attempt to retake Moria. So he sees the recklessness of it and says that. And then I thought, we hear these drums, and again, also Frodo had been hearing some drums in
tap, 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 tone.
Yeah, right. And I think it is a shame that he kept that secret, because that might have helped. So I think, again, that privacy or secrecy for whatever reason, but if he couldn't have confided in somebody, would that have helped? And we don't know that, because he didn't. Who is beating the drums?
I don't think we ever actually find out.
And I'm wondering, again, if it's even an effect. And I realize that it's written about in this book that they've discovered, this that's crumbling and falling apart. Mm-hmm. So clearly it's not like it's one person's individual fantasy of hearing drums. But I even wonder if it's somehow is an effect upon them all of terror, their heartbeats multiplied or something. I don't know. We'll come back to it later when the sound of the drums changes.
When I read this every single time, I'm just kind of struck by how it goes from the tom tap, tom tap, tap, tom to this vast boom and doom. And I feel like the initial sounds that Frodo hears are almost like a Morse code, a kind of telegraph where they are summoning the enemies. But once the enemies are rallied, there is nothing to do but to focus their attacks, and so that's what is turning this entire chamber into a vast drum. And that's really a bit of artistic license, but that's how I always get it, and that's why this chapter admittedly gives me a little bit of anxiety every single time.
And I've read it probably 12 or 15 times just to get ready for today. I wanted also to draw attention to the fact that there are a number of times when Legolas and Gimli are starting to be paired, and they are coming, we cannot get out. That's Legolas and then Gimli. And so just drawing attention to the inevitable friendship that is growing. And even, would others call that reckless? Would another elf say Legolas was being reckless? Would another dwarf say Gimli was being reckless because of the history of some strife between the two peoples? So we are starting to see these two drawing together into a friendship, and that is maybe something that could be seen as reckless, though I would not call that a bad thing at that point, but I'm just noticing that within the chapter.
That's a really great way to catch it. I mean, it definitely is something where some people within both the cultures would be like, don't you know that these people are weak? Don't you know that these people are overbearing, that they're not to be trusted, that they're self-serving? And those are very much stereotypes or prejudices that have existed in the past. And we saw that in The Hobbit, really. But it's something that the Fellowship in itself is trying to combat. And so I like that you pointed that out.
And it will get tested and will pass the test very much, very soon, as we know. And I see Aragorn then saying, we will make them fear the chamber of Mezrabul. And I see that as kind of that recklessness of bravery, or bravery in the sense that we mean it. He doesn't know that they are going to do that. But he's trying to rally them all. And my goodness, there's a troll. And then for me, then the next one is Frodo with this hot wrath blazing up in his heart, and he yells the Shire, or he cries out the Shire, and stabs with sting at the hideous foot. And what a great callback to Bilbo's first challenge in The Hobbit, where he has no weapon and no idea of what to do. And now he has taken Bilbo's sword and has wounded or stopped a troll. What a reckless and brave thing to do.
Yeah. Well, my next part was, honestly, I could quote the entire next five paragraphs, but I'm just going to say.
I have R.
I just have this entire bracket over this section that starts with how many the company could not count. The affray was sharp, but the orcs were dismayed by the fierceness of the defense. And I have this long note in the section, if we were doing the marginalia, I say battle of this kind is without consideration and therefore reckless in itself. The hobbits are to fend for themselves without intention. And it's not the intention of anyone in the company to put these people in a vulnerable position, but they in themselves are just, it's audacity without having their mettle tested. And this is, I would not like to, you say, I volunteered for the army and said be thrust into a live fire situation like this.
Being trapped and all of that. And then again, we have Legolas shot two through the throat. Gimli hewed the legs from under another. So again, they're paired. And, you know, for whatever intent, I'm just noticing that they are paired. And then there's a big one soon. So we'll get to it. But, and in fact, Gimli had to be dragged away by Legolas when they finally flee, but we're not done yet. Sam has his moment of recklessness. He has avoided an orc and then kills one.
Go Sam.
Go Sam. And then we have the orc chieftain in his own restlessness. And I will point out, the orc chieftain is huge, but they say, or the book says, almost man high. So I had an idea of them, you know, 12 feet tall. So now I'm like, okay, the orcs, I'm bringing them back down to a more worthy or equal opponent in a way. This is not totally impossible. Trolls maybe, but the huge orc chieftain, almost man high, charges directly at Frodo. So this is reckless on his part. He clearly knows something about Frodo, but this is very reckless that he is going into the midst of this little company. And and who stops him? Sam with a cry hacked at the spear and breaks it. And then Enduril, so Aragorn, neatly takes care of that.
Well, even before that, we have the fact that he talks, it says, with the thrust of his huge hide shield, he turned Boromir's sword and bore him backwards. So Boromir is really the first to stand between Frodo and this orc chieftain.
Right, exactly. And he doesn't harm Boromir. His goal is Frodo. And so there's a recklessness to that, rather than knock out of the way anybody protecting Frodo, just going straight for him. Not trying to give them some tips, but just noticing that. And then they get the chance to run, and they all start to flee. Aragorn picks up Frodo. They think he has been mortally wounded by this blow. Gimli has to be dragged away by Legolas. He's trying to have one last moment with Balin. It's reckless and just heartbreaking. And then,
though I can't blame him for it, I mean, grief robs you of senses.
Yes. And when will he will never get to be at this place again. So wait a few minutes for me at the bottom, but if I do not come soon, go on, go quickly, and choose paths leading right and downwards. I find that reckless and horrifying and terrifying. He is by himself going to try to make a stand here.
Well, he is the best equipped for it, though. I mean, his efforts to do the what he calls the door shutting is admirable. It's a kind of trying to fend off the worst of it, but it takes such a cost on him. And so I wonder if he should have kind of judged himself better by saying, well, I have done what I can do. I cannot expend more energy. I'm going to need to save it for a long later period, because he doesn't know whether or not this will be the last time that he has to face something this drastic. And he doesn't even know what it is that is actually following them, or that it is hunting them, really.
Right.
And so it just frustrates. Oh, this is like, well, I want to go into things later, but just seeing someone who is injured taking another injury because they are not paying attention to what caused the original injury, and it feels like that and that and that. It's a very hard chapter to get through for me.
It's very hard. I mean, I have a hard time with such action sequences anyway, because I just have a hard time visualizing and understanding and kind of keeping everything straight. And that's why I've read it so many times and over again. I finally found a map of Moria, which didn't help. It is obviously huge and complex and all that, but I will study that some more. And then war is, or a battle or a fight is reckless anyway. And that's not a negative judgment. That is just what is required in the moment. So Gandalf makes, one hopes, the best decision for the time, and he doesn't know that he's met his match and will meet it again. He feels he has nearly been destroyed, and he thinks it's over. He is rather shaken. Go on, go on. And he relies on Gimli to lead them forward.
And what I think there's a lovely moment of allowing the dwarf to take charge in defending Moria to the last. Mm-hmm. And I'm not entirely sure that that was the purpose, but I think it's kind of a nod to the cultural wisdom that Gimli has in knowing how to go into a dwarven place.
And again, another example of good leadership. It doesn't always have to be one person. It sometimes has to be the right person. So I really respect that Gandalf is able to do that kind of delegating in the moment. And it's not the only time in the chapter. And then we have a little respite. Is there anything before that?
I'm trying to figure out where you're referring to the respite.
Well, they've gone about a mile. They are able to take a pause for a little bit. They're into a chamber
at
some point, and they're able to talk for a little bit. And Aragorn says, "I can only say that hobbits are made of a stuff so tough that I have never met the like of it." And it didn't skewer me, I'm glad to say, said Frodo, though I feel as if I had been caught between a hammer and an anvil. Mm-hmm. Said no more, he found breathing painful. And then Gandalf says, "You take after Bilbo, there is more about you than meets the eye, as I said of him long ago." Frodo wondered if the remark meant more than it said. And this is, I know we're doing Havruta, but we're not using this passage. But I will ask, what do you think Frodo is wondering? What does this remark mean more? And I'd love your answer first. So we're definitely not doing Havruta here. So what do you
think? Well, I'm going to go back to our previous second breakfast where I was talking about the I matter because statement that I was a, for anyone who hasn't gotten around to reading the blog yet, I was reading several, 36 separate poems or essays or short stories based on the idea of what makes a person matter. And I talked in last week's Second Breakfast about how there is more substance to Bilbo. There is something that is forged in his adventures. And so when Gandalf says there is something the matter with you, there's a little bit of a double meaning to that. And so I feel like Frodo is understanding that when Gandalf is referring to them there being more than meets the eye, he is talking about in the same kind of vein what there is the matter with him. And so Gandalf knows that he, like Bilbo, is a ring bearer, and that he, like Bilbo, is under the influence of a power, whether he is using it, whether he is enthralled to it, we don't know. But Gandalf shortly will have no further answers for it for a time, but you know.
Right. I think that is right. And I think there's one other thing. Bilbo did not admit to having the ring. Mm-hmm. And Frodo is not admitting that he has the Mithril. So yep. I think there's more about you than meets the eye. Gandalf has figured out that there is something that we can't see about Frodo. So I think all of what you said is absolutely right. And I think also it shows that Gandalf knows that Frodo is well equipped here. So I think that's a beautiful comment that he makes that means many things. And also, I mean, we're dancing around it. Gandalf is possibly also aware that at any moment it could be the last thing he says mm-hmm. to anybody. So
I'm trying not to think about Harry Potter 6 in this context.
I know I'm not at all. What is your next place for recklessness?
It is when Gandalf is really weighing the consequences. It's after we have finally understood it, that what is chasing them is the Balrog. Balrog has come, according to Legolas. And Gandalf says, now I understand what an evil fortune, and I am already weary. Mm-hmm. And it says, the dark figure streaming with fire raced towards them. The orcs yelled and poured over the stone gateways. Then Boromir raised his horn and blew. Loud the challenge rang and bellowed like the shout of many throats under the cavernous roof. For a moment the orcs quailed and the fiery shadow halted. Then the echoes died as suddenly as a flame blown out by a dark wind, and the enemy advanced again.
Yes.
Over the bridge, cried Gandalf, recalling his strength. Fly, this is a foe beyond any of you. I must hold the narrow way. Fly.
Mm-hmm.
And so he has finally got this understanding, and he understands what cost it has brought him to hold this back, but also what it will cost to stand against it. And I don't know at what point Gandalf realizes that this is something that will overwhelm him.
Right, right. But he's going to get the rest out and get them across mm-hmm. that bridge. So it is this reckless sort of last ditch. I think the next thing for me is when he does say, you cannot pass, you cannot pass. Three times, four times he says it. And it is reckless. He doesn't have the power to stop it. Actually, it is referred to as it. I think that is mm-hmm. interesting that it is not gendered. Balrog is sort of beyond that. So it is a brave, foolish, reckless stand that he's making.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last thing he does say to them, fly, you fools. And fools are reckless. So as he descends, ensnared by the whip of the Balrog, even though he's destroyed the bridge and destroyed the sword,
mm-hmm.
the whip he cannot defeat. He calls them all fools. So he's calling on the recklessness within them to keep going.
Well, there's such a kind of, not parallel, but tie between recklessness to go on, but also previous to that thing, we have from out of the shadow a red sword leaped flaming, and Glamdring mm-hmm. glittered white in answer. And so there's this strength to stand, but there is so massive consequences. And so Gandalf knows the wisdom of when to make a stand and when to let others get away. Mm-hmm. And so I don't want to spoil things, but there is a quote in a coming chapter, I believe it's the next one, where it says, needless were none of the deeds of Gandalf. And that is a comfort to me, because this entire chapter, part of the reason why I get anxious over it every single time is that I keep on seeing these consequences and these actions and things that cannot be escaped, and going, why did any of this happen? Why did any of this have to be brought upon a company that has already suffered some things? Mm-hmm. This is just so completely destructively set, and it frustrates mm-hmm. me that I can't stop it from happening, that there's going to be this end result that's so calamitous in this moment. And so it's like I said, it's really big comfort that there was nothing that was needless about it. And it's not that I have any answers as to why it was not needless.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. So
yes, and even the drumming has a mournful sound now,
mm-hmm.
which still makes me wonder what it is, because if it were orcs or goblins, they wouldn't be mourning. It would be triumphant. And so it still makes me think it's an effect of being in there, but it's still something that is within each person, mm-hmm. hobbit, dwarf, elf, and human. It's within them that the drums actually are not real, but it is a shared oral hallucination, auditory hallucination. So I'm willing to be wrong, but
I'm curious about that because there are several points throughout the Fellowship of the Ring in which we see that each person hears something different when they're subjected to a certain kind of power.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if this effect of the drums is something similar to that, where you say that it's entirely internalized. And so it is a collective hallucination, but it's a different effect on each person. And it makes me wonder what everyone else experienced.
Sure, exactly. And maybe the goblins and orcs that are still inside Moria are hearing this as celebratory drums, mm-hmm. and festival drumming. And so I don't know, you know, I'm just pondering and I'm noting those things as I'm reading, because of course it's all new to me. Mm-hmm. And I just love this last guard of orcs, and Aragorn smote to the ground the captain that stood in his path, and the rest fled in the terror of his wrath. Mm-hmm. And I see that kind of recklessness, because again, they're diminished in number. They don't have Gandalf's power. And he doesn't know what these other orcs will do in response to him killing this one. And it comes out right for them in this case. and even when they are outside, they are still hearing the doom, mm-hmm. doom, doom. They start to fade. So I'm just really struck by this whole pulse all throughout the chapter. Did I miss any recklessness?
I don't think we possibly skipped anything.
Okay. And I think that was, okay, I've asked my major questions except for the one I'm saving for the Hefruta. Mm-hmm. And so I think we can move into that. Does that make sense? All right. And of course, if I missed anything, everybody can email us or comment on the Facebook or add us on Twitter and all of those things. So we'll give you all of those ways later. But now we will go into our Hefruta, which is a method of learning between two friends. So it's not necessarily like mm-hmm. the kind of platonic way where a teacher asks questions of the student. This is where we ask questions of each other. So I will ask you a question and then I will provide an answer and then you can answer in your own way. And first, this is the last and to me the greatest place where I see Legolas and Gimli connected. So I'll read this. Aye, wailed Legolas, a Balrog is come. Gimli stared with wide eyes. Durin's bane, he cried, and letting his axe fall, he covered his face. A Balrog, muttered Gandalf. Now I understand. So my question is, how is it that Legolas and Gimli know what it is before Gandalf does? And I find that fascinating. And I rarely do outside research just because I'm so new to this and I just enjoy so much your knowledge and all of that. And I want you to be that person. I did dive into Balrogs a little bit.
Oh, good.
Because I don't have a complete answer. I'm really surprised that Gandalf does not recognize this until it is named by Legolas and Gimli. And so my proposed answer is he did not know that any still existed.
Mm.
So what do you think? And you can certainly tell people more about Balrogs if you'd like.
Well, for me, it goes back, at least in Gimli's circumstance, to the fact that dwarves are heritage tellers. They are people who pass down stories of what things they have encountered in the past and things that the following generations should be aware of. And elves have very long memories of what has been fought against in their kind and in their battles of the past. And so I think both of these things are very relevant. And I think that Gandalf is not trying to flip through an encyclopedia to find what he's encountering by like, okay, well, we've got, yep, there's shadow, there's flame. Well, it could be this, it could be that. I think it's more that it reminds me again of this place has known magic. He is going by the sense of what things are. And so he is not thinking concretely. He is thinking of counterattacks to what he is sensing as the danger rather than this concrete thing.
Very good. Oh, interesting. Very interesting. And I just appreciate it. Now I understand. He faltered and leaned heavily on his staff. What an evil fortune, and I am already weary. So my, you know, sort of a follow-up question would be, are you surprised that that's his response? I mean, Legolas is crying in fear. Gimli drops his weapon and covers mm-hmm. his face. And Gandalf says, geez, I need a nap. I mean, not exactly. I'm making light of his weariness.
I think it's a moment of self-reflection where he is absolutely aware of how little he has left and how much he has spent.
And that's why I've been looking so carefully at these final words. Mm-hmm. Lead the way, Gimli, and then even fly, you fools. And he's summing up as much as he can. You've got to keep going. You've got to stay together. He's saying as much as he possibly can. And so I'm just trying to read almost clues in these things. Even when he's speaking to the Balrog, is he trying to give hints to the rest of them? Don't let this dark fire affect you. Mm-hmm. Don't stay in the shadow. Get out. You know. So I'm kind of trying to see how much he's trying to tell them, knowing that this could go so badly. Mm-hmm. And I will say, you know, as a new reader, even I don't think he's dead. So, you know, and it's not.
Well, we'll discuss that later.
We will discuss that later. But it, you know, maybe if I were a younger reader, I would have fallen for that. But I'm not there, and that's fine. And that's the one sort of comfort in the chapter is kind of like, yeah, sure. Yeah, this is tragic and all of those things, but I think there's it doesn't say he's dead.
He fell. It does not say he died. Right.
Exactly. And that's the benefit of being a slightly older reader. I'm sure at 18 I would have been sobbing and the pages would have been a mess. So
at 14 it took me a couple of days to get onto the next chapter.
Right. Well, I'm kind of excited about the next chapter because it's not every day that I see my name. So we will move on next to the sixth chapter of The Journey of the Nine Companions. And its title is Lothlórien. Mm-hmm. Our theme will be respite. But before we move forward, do you have any exhortations for characters in the chapter or outside of the chapter?
I have an exhortation for the company to bear in mind Gandalf's weariness, to see what he expended and what he had remaining, and to give themselves a little bit of grace in terms of dealing with the aftermath of this so that they will have more strength in the future.
I like that. And I think I would exhort Frodo to confide a bit more. I mean, he trusts Aragorn. He's got Sam, Merry, Pippin. I mean, I think at least one of them needs to be kind of this Anamkara to him. And I think, you know, it's kind of a mistake to think of Sam as like a servant. I think he needs to start trusting Sam as an Anamkara, and that's a Celtic expression for soul friend. Mm-hmm. I think he needs a friend as he's going into this. So it's just heartbreaking that he hadn't told anybody about the mithril, and I don't know what that would change. And maybe they would have been even more reckless, thinking, "Oh, he'll be fine." So I don't know. But knowing, hey, you know, we are where we are, and moving forward, I just hope that Frodo will start to confide a little bit more mm-hmm. in somebody, either Aragorn or Sam. That's my exhortation. So would you tell people how to reach us or find us, please?
Absolutely. The easiest way is, as you said before, www.asacredfellowship.com, or you can always email us at asacredfellowship@gmail.com. We can get a text, we can get voicemails, any sort of thing you have occasion to send to us. On Twitter, we're asacredfellows1. On Instagram, we're asacredfellowship. And of course, on Facebook, we are A Sacred Fellowship.
Find us, talk to us, tell us stuff, tell us
your correct us our stories. I'm just thinking there will be someone who will have comments to say about the Balrogs.
There will be, and we welcome that. But that's the thing with literature. It's out in the world, and it's free to interpret anyway. But mm-hmm. yes, I understand that we are not the very first to read these things.
But on the other hand, speaking of interpretations, would you like to remind people of what's happening this Saturday?
Yes, and of course, this particular podcast will last through all of time, but in the time that we are recording it, we are still looking forward to Saturday, February 13th, which is the gathering worldwide of the Tolkien Society. This is the year 2021, and on this Saturday, your co-hosts are presenting a paper on hospitality as it is found in The Hobbit, not just within the pages, but within the readers. Mm-hmm. So we are presenting a talk on that. And I will thank Catherine for all of her work on
marshaling. And your hard work this morning. My gosh, you saved my bacon.
And thank you also for even submitting a proposal. So I'm mm-hmm. really excited to do this and to join this kind of wider thing. And hopefully that will lead to a few more listeners who can tell us all about Balrogs and everything else. So do you have a note from the Shire for us?
I do. I was looking at the responses to our community question from last week, in which we were asking, what is recklessness, or how do you see recklessness in your own life? And we have a note that's kind of in two parts from our listener, Jim Stock. Mm-hmm. He says, "I can be short-term reckless when upset, as many are, but I am very risk-averse in the long term. Safety and stability are important to me, so no recklessness there." And then he later says, "You know those people at work that say, 'Let's just start this big new thing project. It will be fine. Everything will work out.' And the person next to them says, 'Here's everything that could go wrong, and here are the contingency plans and fixes when things go wrong.' I am that second person." And Jim, yes, I am that second person as well.
Very good. And I'm that first person. So, and that's why we have a podcast, because somebody said, "Why don't we?" And I'm like, "Sure, what could go wrong?" We're doing it. So thank you, Jim. And again, we would love to have you join the conversation about recklessness or any of the other themes that we've had. Mm-hmm. I think that brings us to the end, unless there's something I'm forgetting.
Not that I can think of, but thank you so much for spending time with us this week, and may Elbereth protect you. Be of good hope. Namarie.
Namarie.